Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55.
Charles! Charlie, is that you? Is that you, Charlie? Charlie, it's me, Benny!
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, folks. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. I'd also like to welcome my wonderful co-hosts, Bobby and Robert. And sadly, we're missing Dave today. But, oh, wait a minute. Nope, it's not Dave. I thought Dave was coming in.
That's it. Hey,
what are you playing in the background there?
Rod Stewart, Forever Young. Ain't that special?
Forever.
You can't get off my lawn. Had to get that one in there. Whippersnappers.
Hey, I'm a Bob Dylan fan, so that's okay with me. That's you know, that's Bob Dylan's song. That's Bob Dylan's song, yeah.
Yep.
Forever Young.
Yep.
And, yeah, well, sadly, we are missing Dave today, but maybe he'll stop in later. I hope he comes in before the end of the show. If not, then we will just add his comments later on, or we'll see him during the next show. But today's episode is called Kick the Can, and here's Robert again with the opening clip.
Well, at least we'll hopefully be alive. We won't kick the can after we review this, so here we go.
It is sometimes said that where there is no hope, there is no life. Case in point, the residents of Sunnyvale Rest Home, where hope is just a memory. But Hope just checked into Sunnyvale, disguised as an elderly optimist who carries his magic in a shiny tin can.
And now, Mr. Serling. Sunnyvale Rest, a home for the aged, a dying place and a common children's game called Kick the Can that will shortly become a refuge for a man who knows he will die in this world if he doesn't escape into the Twilight Zone.
Yes, I had to get that Twilight Zone movie in there.
Uh-huh, yes, I see you did both, and that's excellent, yeah, that you did both. Well, as we know, Kick the Can, it centers around Charles Whitley, and then he's a resident at the Sunnyvale Rest Home. He's tired of growing old, as we all are, and watching all the other residents just sitting around and vegetating. He thinks that he has discovered the secret of youth. He's convinced that if he acts young, he'll become young. His oldest and best friend, Ben Conroy, now he thinks Charlie is going crazy. So, you know, and Charlie is his best friend, so he's concerned about him. He thinks he's going nuts. So one night, you know, Charlie convinces a number of the residents to play a game of kick the can with him, and he tries to talk Ben into playing. Ben refuses, absolutely refuses. He says, no, I'm old. I'm not going to go out there and break my bones playing kick the can. Well, the game of kick the can transforms Charlie Whitley and the other residents who joined him back into children. So Ben Conroy and the home superintendent, Mr. Cox, go outside where they find the group of children playing kick the can under the night sky. Mr. Cox chases...
Bliss.
Yeah, isn't that sweet? And Mr. Cox, he chases them all off.
You can't get off my lawn!
Get the hell out of here, you little... You know what? You little rugrat. So he chases them all, but one kid stops, and he looks at Ben. And Ben now sees the miracle, and he realizes that the child who's looking at him is Charlie. And he begs his friend for a second chance to go off with him and be young again, too. But it's too late. He's left behind. Aww.
He had that deer in the headlight looks, and he took off just like a deer with the rest of the kids. Yeah,
he did. And so Mr. Cox, he expects Ben to help him search for the elderly people, but of course Ben knows they'll never be found. And the saddest scene, Ben walks slowly to the front of the steps of Sunnydale, and he sits there with the can all alone. Oh, but this is, you know what? This is one of those episodes that works in almost every respect. It had a wonderful cast led by the absolutely delightful Ernest Truex. Now, somebody correct me. Bobby told me earlier that his name, T-R-U-E-X. I say Truex, but Bobby thinks it's pronounced, the X is silent, and it's Ernest True. Does anyone know?
I've heard it pronounced, and it's true.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Really?
Hey, I'm looking.
Okay.
I know how to pronounce potatoes, so, you know.
All right. Well, we'll say true, okay? It had a wonderful cast led by Ernest True, and I absolutely adore this man. He's like, to me, he is what everybody's grandfather should look like. He's like the perfect grandfatherly type guy, right? Isn't he? I mean, absolutely fabulous. And he was just as endearing in this story as he was in What You Need from season 1.
Yep.
Yeah, What You Need. Remember that? And except that in Kick the Can, his nemesis isn't the dog, the dangerous dog. It's old age. And he wants to stay young.
To give him those slippery shoes. That's
those
what I needed.
Slippery shoes.
Slippery
exactly.
shoes.
That's what I needed. Exactly. And he wants to stay young. He plays the role of Charles Whitley to perfection. And the thing I love about Ernest True is that he has a wonderfully expressive face. He conveys sadness, happiness, excitement, giddiness. I mean, he expresses them so well that you can't help but feel everything that he's feeling. Yeah. And Ben Conroy is his lifelong friend and roommate at the nursing home. But he's the complete opposite of Charles. I mean, he's accepted the fact that he's old and has no desire to engage in the youthful activities that Charles talks about with all of his enthusiasm, running through the sprinklers and, you know, playing kick the can, all these things. And I love the scene where Charles and the other residents, they sneak out of the home like a bunch of mischievous kids. You know, they're running down, sneaking down the steps. And, of course, Ben, he wants no part of it. And he reports them to the hospital administrator, Mr. Cox, and he arrives on the scene, but he arrives too late. All of the old folks who played kick the can on the lawn have turned back into children again, but Mr. Cox doesn't know this, and he goes off searching for the old folks, and, you know, Ben knows it, and he suddenly decides, oh, my God, I'm all alone here. I want to go with you guys. I want to be young again, too, but he missed his chance, and to me, I thought the guy, Russell Collins played Ben, and he played the role of Ben with just the right amount of curmudgeonly attitude mixed with a small amount of sympathy and concern for his old friend. Because he really was concerned about Charlie. I mean, he was scared that he was going nuts, you know, so he did care about him. But, you know, he also, you know, it was like concern, but, you know, I'm not going to go along with this kind of, it was just like, he was a curmudgeon, but he cared, that kind of thing. So, you know, who he reminded me of? Remember Static, the episode Static, the radio? Dean Jagger. He reminded me of that character. He almost even looks a little like him. Dean Jagger's character in Static, he was a grouch, but he had a soft side hidden deep down. And, you know, I thought the rest of the cast was great, too. I mean, who do we see? We see good old Burt Mustin as one of the residents. Here's a character actor. I think this guy has shown up on every TV show at one time or another throughout his entire career. I don't think there's a TV show in existence that Burt Mustin hasn't shown up in. And it's one other thing. It's interesting to note here that the guy who played Charles's son was Ernest True's real-life son, Barry. Yeah, that was his real-life. Yeah, that was his real-life son. And he was in it, what, for 10 seconds? But he didn't get it. He got like 10 seconds of screen time. He wasn't mentioned in the credits. I don't even. I meant to look him up today on IMDb, and I forgot to do it to see if he ever did anything else. But that was his real life son. And, Robert, I forgot. You mentioned in your review that this original episode is much better than the remake that was done for the 83 Twilight Zone movie. And I absolutely agree. I mean, yeah. I love Scatman Crothers. Don't you, Ed, do you agree?
Oh, he's great.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree that this episode was much better than the movie version.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love Scatman Crothers. He's a pleasure to watch too. But I didn't like how reworked the script was and with the new ending and all. And I'm not a big fan of remaking classic TV shows anyway. And I'm afraid the Twilight Zone movie was a real disappointment for me, with the exception of Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with John Lithgow, although I do still prefer the original with William Shatner, even though the Gremlins suit looked like a very cheap, something that you'd wear to bed at night. still kind of a fleece thing that some old lady, I don't know what they did with that.
It defies description, yeah.
Yeah, it defies description. I can't even think about it. But one other thing I remember you asked Robert was if you were correct about Richard Matheson being responsible.
Yeah, that was one of the ones about, because he got credit, but I wasn't for sure. There were some changes that was done. You mentioned that it was the daughter that did the changes.
It wasn't his daughter. No. Actually, Richard turned in a draft of the segment, but a woman named Melissa Matheson, that's the same name as he has, but she spells it differently. She's not related to him at all. She made the changes. And according to the Twilight Zone Companion, this is where I found this out, she was the screenwriter for the movie E.T. And after Richard Matheson submitted his draft, Ms. Matheson, no relation, completely overhauled it. And so needless to say, what was his name? George Clayton Johnson. George Clayton Johnson, he wrote the original episode, and he wasn't pleased at all. He called Richard Matheson, and he completely went off. He voiced his displeasure. And Richard said, hey, I wasn't the one who wrote that. You know, I wrote, a totally different script, and she screwed around with it and messed it up. So, it wasn't Richard's fault, but I don't know. And in a way, I suppose the movie ending, in reality, and just talking reality, not Twilight Zone, made more sense, because little kids can't live on their own, can they? They're still, they can't. But you know what? I don't care, because there's still something very sweet and charming about the original ending that I prefer. Seeing Ben standing there, watching the kids run off without him, that was heartbreaking, because now he's all alone. And the beginning was heartbreaking. When we see the sadness on Charlie's face when his son leaves him behind at the end, and at the end, so both of them, actually, it's kind of like Charlie's left alone at the end, Ben's left alone. Oh, no, actually, I shouldn't say that. Ben's left alone at the beginning. His son leaves him. And then at the end, wait, am I saying the right thing? Charlie, right?
Charlie's one of his son.
I'm getting my guys mixed up here.
That's okay.
I'm getting my guys mixed up. Okay, Charlie's left alone at the end by his son. And then at the end, Ben's left alone by Charlie. So it's all, everybody's being left alone at some point.
Because the Charlie character was portrayed in the movie by Scatman Crothers, pretty much.
Yeah. And he didn't have a son. In the movie, did his son come to get him? I forget now.
They had the whole exact thing with the son, and he goes into the car, and he talks to the son, and he gets out. So they do keep that one the same as in the episode.
Yeah, I forgot if the son was there. Yeah, so it's kind of the same thing. I don't know. I don't want to go back to my childhood. I mean, I wouldn't mind going back to my 30s. Early 30s would be okay. I'll go back to my early 30s. Too many things in my childhood and teen years I don't want to relive. you know.
Just stay away from magical carousels.
That's right. Yeah, magical carousels and those things. I don't know. I suppose Charlie and the rest were happy for the time being. And I was happy to see it left at that. I didn't need it reworked. They didn't need to change it or remake it for the movie. But I like this episode. I actually really like this episode. So I'm rating it a 4 for excellence because I love Ernest Drew, and I just thought it was really well done. So, Robert, go right ahead.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I like this episode a lot better than the one from the movie, and I do agree with that. It kind of reminded me of the remember the Frosty the Snowman, you know, how we always have those Christmas shows on every year,
yeah.
You know, and about the magic hat, and, you know, was there magic in the hat that brought Frosty to life? Was there magic in that can that could turn the clock back for the older folks and, you know, make them young again? I was kind of thinking of that when I was watching it. There was some humor that was added to the episode, but in the right places. And one of the questions that, you know, we were discussing that is answered in the movie itself for me was, how are these kids going to survive without the parents, you know, supporting them, food, shelter, clothes, etc.? Do they really want to end up as orphans and going back to the school all over again?
The movie version is the more realistic ending because the kids do realize that where are we going to live? You know, who's going to take care of us? You know,
I do have that clip, I'll go ahead and play that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wish to appear ungrateful, but why didn't you come too?
I found out long, long time ago. I wanted to be my own true age and try and keep a young mind. Your wishes come true. Your children again. You got your whole life before you.
My life was hard. I had a swell life. I could do 60 years standing on my head.
I'm cold. Where are we going to spend the night? Who's going to take care of us?
No problem for us. We'll just knock on our son's door and say, "Let us in, Mari. We're your parents."
Now, wait a minute. Let's think this over. I mean, we're talking about being young again. We're talking about sex.
But Jack Dancy isn't here. I'll never meet him. My ring. My wedding ring. It fell off. Oh, please, I didn't ask to be young again. All I wanted to do is dance. I can be old and dance.
I'm not going to school again.
I remember the night that my father died. We laid him out and sent all the children outside. I saw Halley's Comet fly over. I don't want to lose all the people that I loved again.
I was too young to see Halley's Comet. I was going to see it when I was 80 years old.
Well, that's only 2 birthdays away, Mrs. Dempsey. Would you like to see it at 8 or 80?
80.
Well, you can always go inside and go back to bed. Maybe a few old folks had a little of that magic still left in you. You could wake up back in your old nice bodies. But the fresh young mind.
Okay, 2 things that this brings up for me with that clip. 1, it almost feels like you're watching an episode of Amazing Stories, because this was a segment that was done by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the music and the dialogue and the way it's all set up, it's almost like an episode of Amazing Stories.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
And also the second point with that is it was very much the answer to the question that we were wondering back in the original episode, you know, what is going to happen to these kids. I mean, these people in the movie seem to be able to keep their memory of all the years and stuff that they did. Because you heard the one little girl act, you know, she sounded more like she was 60 than 6 or whatever age she was. The one that wore the hairnet there.
I
the
know
movie.
When I was talking like that. That one.
Yeah. But the whole thing is in the episode, they seem to change with the clothes that they had when they were kids at the time.
And
so it was telling me that it raced. Yeah, erase their memory.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right, it's like they're back to the time when they were 10 years old. Now they're going to have a terrible surprise when they all go back home to their parents and find their parents about 60 years old and stuff.
Well, yeah.
Or might not be alive.
You're right, and you find the two things that I noticed was the one that says, well, I lost my wedding ring. So she knows that she was married. You know, she realized that she was married, lost her wedding. And the other one says, well, just knock on our son's door and say, hi, it's our parents.
Marty, it's your parents.
Exactly. You got to love that kid that played that. She was really good. She was great. Well, yeah, I mean, but I still like the original. I just love it because it's just, it's something charming about the ending. They went off, and yeah, God knows they're probably all, I don't know, I don't want to say anything bad happened to them, but they all went off and they ran to the whatever they ran to. I don't know. I don't know what happened to them at the end, but it's a Twilight Zone, so we just assume that there was a happy ending.
Well, when I rated this, I rated it both. I rated, the movie and the episode itself. I mean, pretty much you had Scatman Crothers in the movie, which I like Scatman Crothers.
I
remember
love
when she killed the man.
Yeah.
You know, here comes the garbage man. Remember
and
him?
That man does not know how to say anything without a smile on his face. Have you ever seen Scatman Crothers say anything without smiling?
Well, until he had that hatchet come at him in The Shining, that's kind of a difference.
That's right. That's a red hatchet. But when he talks, he's always got his teeth. His teeth are always right there. He's got these big teeth that just, you know. And he's like, how you doing, son? You got to love him. I love him.
But that was the part, you know, of the story. I liked him. And unfortunately, like I said, the story lost something in the mix when it was made. As I said before with you, it felt very much like an amazing story episode. So when I rated the episode, I rated it as you did, a 4 out of 5. But for the kick of the can portion of the movie, I only gave it a 2 out of 5.
Oh, yeah, the movie, yeah.
Yeah,
but the original episode you gave a 4?
Yeah, just like you. I kind of said, reason being why I didn't give a classic, and I'm going to ask you that too, Lynn, but let me go ahead and answer that. It was just too boring. It just stretched out boring, and the movie isn't any better in the pacing part of it.
I
liked the personality part in the movie more than I liked it in the original episode. That's why I gave a 4 out of 5.
Same reason. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because I thought the of course I adore Ernest Stroke. I think he's terrific. I thought the acting was very good for what it was. Yes, it dragged. I agree that it dragged. And one thing that Bobby will probably tell you this about the guy that played Mr. Cox. This is really funny about the guy that played Mr. Cox. Bobby, you tell him about the thing with the age. But you know,
I don't remember what you're referring to.
Bob Marley or John Marley. I'm sorry, Bob Marley.
Oh, that. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not throwing reggae here. No.
Yeah, I know.
We be jamming, slamming. Yep.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Happy.
No, the age thing. You tell him, Bobby.
Yeah. I
but,
will.
Yeah. All right. But no. But as far as the acting, as far as the actual plot, the whole idea of the episode, I thought it was wonderful. It did drag. I did think it was boring at times. They could have done a little bit more as far as a little bit more something. You know, we ran through the sprinklers. Okay, well, maybe they should have them do a little bit more than that. But that I gave it a 4 because I just liked the idea. I love Ernest True. I thought Russell Collins was fabulous. And that's the only reason. But I could not give it a 5 because it was not, it did not make me sit on the edge of my seat the entire 23 minutes.
Like, well, that one guy that was in a rocking chair, I remember that actor.
Oh, God, if you remember.
Yeah, he was in Archie Bunker towards the end of his career. Remember they paired him up with
You're talking
a,
about Burt Munson.
Older woman.
Burt Munson.
Yeah.
Burt
yep,
Munson's
because I remember
everything.
Him in that. Yeah, he was in everything.
There's not a TV show that Burt Munson hasn't been in, I don't think. But and the man started his career late in life, too. And he started when he was in his 50s or 60s, and he was in every damn show in the world. I don't know, but he's been in everything. But, yeah, it just dries a little, so it can't – it's not like Time Enough at Last where you're sitting there from beginning to end, and it totally captivates you. This did not captivate mm-hmm. me from beginning to end, but it's worth a 4 to me.
Well, to finish this up really quick, so that way give it over to Bobby, because I know I should start going last because I take so long because I have all these clips and stuff that I throw at you for these
episodes.
I'm sorry, episodes,
give you a chance to take a nap. That's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, then go ahead. Go outside and tell the kids to get off your lawn, Bobby, and I'll keep going here. It does remind me of some other movies. Big, for example, with Tom Hanks, where we kind of get the opposite.
I love that movie.
Where he's a kid, mm-hmm. and he goes to a carnival, and there's a gypsy booth, mm-hmm. One of those electronic ones, where he makes his wish, I wish I was big, and the card comes out and says your wish is granted, and then he wakes up the next day, 35-year-old Tom Hanks there, and Elizabeth Perkins is in it. She's a wonderful actress. There's another one who's been in a lot of stuff as well.
She's a good actress, but she was not good looking.
She was in Miracle on 34th Street, The Flintstones. I mean, you name movie, she was pretty much in it. And but yeah, I kind of like Big, especially the piano scene where Robert Long.
Oh, and Robert Loggia.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this is great. Yeah.
Where they're in the toy store and they're doing the dance on the big giant piano on the floor. So.
Absolutely.
And then another movie it reminded me of, too, is Something Wicked This Way Comes. And
Stephen King.
Based on Ray Bradbury. It's
Wait
a Disney
a minute, I
film.
I thought that was Stephen King.
Nope. Ray Bradbury and
Sorry
it was a Disney
that.
Film.
Okay,
it had Jonathan Pryce in it as Mr. Dark. I do have the trailer for that.
Hellfire storms are coming. An electric storm to clean your streets and wash away your troubles.
For every heart, there exists a wish.
You ever play the numbers, Mr. Holloway?
Me? Never take risks.
For every soul, there burns a desire.
Why, he's up.
Always was.
Smells to me like we're going to have visitors.
But never whisper your dreams, for someone might be listening. And for every wish, there will be a price. For every desire, there will be a cost.
3 o'clock. They call it the soul's midnight.
My name is Mr. Dark. I advise you to respect it.
Dad, please be careful.
Will.
Will.
These boys I'm looking for. Perhaps you know them?
Fine boys, fine. Both of them quite a credit to this little town, if you want to know the truth.
I do want to know the truth, sir. And the truth is that you are lying.
I am pretty near my thoughts, something wicked this way come.
Then rang the bells, both loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep.
Where do you come from? The dust. Where do you go to? The grave.
Yes. We are the hungry ones. Your torments call us like dogs in the night. And we do feed. And feed well. But tell me where the boys are hiding. And I can make you young again.
Ray Bradbury's fantasy tale of light and darkness is getting closer. Something wicked this way comes.
And it was an okay movie, except for it could have done some editing. Very long, but I thought it had a great cast. Johnson Price, definitely excellent as Mr. Dark. Jason Robart as the librarian.
I love Jason Robart, yeah.
Yep. He did a pretty good job in that movie. I remember my favorite part of it was the carousel, and that's tied in with our show today about being young, where certain people was able to ride the carousel to be young, or if the carousel went the opposite way, it made you older. So, yeah.
I remember walking distance,
So, very much a 4 out of 5, and with that, I'll pass over to Bobby.
Oh, is it finally my turn? Oh. Robert's review ran
so long.
Did you
get off the lawn?
Robert's review ran so long that now I need to go back and recap.
Oh, he's already in Pennsylvania. Oh, my God. He left without me.
Anyway, I just have one question. How can you call an episode boring and give it a 4? That's beyond me. I mean, it's boring. What is it if it wasn't boring? It's 7 or an 8?
Totally boring. It wasn't totally boring. There were sections, but it was there were aspects of it that make it a 4.
The story's fine. The people are fine. It just could have been
It's boring.
Edited up a little bit better than what it was.
In other words, it's boring, right? Oh. Anyway,
actually, some people call this a classic, Bobby. Surprisingly enough,
well,
some people
they do. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Is it my turn now?
Oh, shut up.
I wish I could join in all the touchy-feely feelings about this episode, but it really doesn't do much for me. And yes, indeed, at IMDb, as usual, it gets a 7.4 rating, and everybody just falls over in a dead faint over it. I'm afraid I don't. It's not a bad story. I don't dislike it, but I just don't think it's very fascinating. Watching a bunch of old farts walking around bemoaning the fact that they're getting old. And so it really, it doesn't do a hell of a lot for me, but it's not bad. And it does have a cast of character actors that is quite impressive. But nothing really happens in it, and it's pretty obvious where it's going to go. I don't think there are any big surprises about it. So I don't have a whole lot about to say about the episode, but I would like to discuss the theory of going back to your childhood, if indeed you could, and whether it would be a good idea, and whether you really want to do it. And what's interesting, whenever there are stories about the possibility of going back to your childhood, and this isn't the first place it ever appeared in, there have been other stories and books and things about the opportunity to turn back the clock and be younger than you were. The obvious reason to go back to your childhood is simply to avoid death. If you can keep going back there, you'll never reach the day when you have to die. That's the obvious reason. But I don't think there's anything to be gained by going back to when you were a child, except for the fact that I think it would be worthwhile. Robert mentioned if you could have your memory when you go back. I think it's more than that. If you could go back to your child and have the wisdom that you've gained, if you're 72 instead of 12, you have 7 decades worth of mistakes that you made, things you did wrong and things you did right, and opportunities that passed you by that you missed. If you could go back and relive your time and now do it right, that would be a good reason to go back. That's something to be gained from it. But just to go back, just to kind of avoid getting older, I don't think there's much to choose on that. And I personally would never want to go back to my childhood because I was a very sick child, and I don't want to live through that again. I had high fevers. I got every cold that came down the pike I got. And I had my temperature was 102, 103, sometimes higher than that. And I had to be rushed to the hospital several times because of having a high fever. So if I had the opportunity to go back, I would say no thanks. I have no desire to relive that. Also, going back, I mean, when you're a kid, what do you look forward to? You look forward to growing up. That's the only thing you really care about, so that you don't, so you can be independent. Your parents don't tell you what to do, where to go, how long you can stay out, what to eat. Now you're on your own, so that's something to look forward to. That you're growing up, and one day you'll be on your own, can make your own decisions. So I don't really think there's a whole lot to. I think if I had the opportunity to go back, I wouldn't. Now, of course, like I said, these people are in a nursing home, but I find it kind of odd that the way they look. They all look depressed. They're looking down the floor. They look sad. They've given up. But there's other things going on in the nursing home. Many people in the nursing home have physical infirmities. They're in wheelchairs, or they're using walkers, or they've had strokes and other problems that brought them in there. And now that would be a reason to go back to your childhood, to get rid of those terrible physical things that happen to you with old age. So there are reasons to go, but I don't think just because you've given up on life or you're bored or you have nothing to look forward to anymore is a real reason to go back to your childhood. It doesn't have to end up that way. I mean, look at Bert Mustin. I mean, I don't know. I forgot to look at IMDb to see how old he was when he was in this episode, but he worked in television and things until his dying day, and he was an old man. So it doesn't have to turn out that way. And it's also interesting to see, this is a 50-year-old story, and you don't see any talk in it the way you would today about Alzheimer's disease, because nobody even knew what it was back then. They just talk briefly about being senile, that's what it was called then. But today, it's a much deeper, a much bigger problem, and I was watching on the national news a couple of weeks ago. They came out with a report that said that Alzheimer's doesn't begin when you get to be 75 and 80 years old. It starts when you're 50 years old, and you don't even know it, starting then, and then it's a progressive thing. So that's another reason to go back to your childhood, to avoid the horrible things that happen to people when they get old and don't know where they are anymore. But I don't. I just think that the story itself is just lacking, and I think it's somewhat unrealistic. I have a question for Lynn and for Robert, and that is that if you go back to your childhood, what happens to all the people that you created on your way to being an adult? These people had children and all. Does that mean that they disappeared? They no longer exist? Can you answer that for me?
You know what's interesting is, let me throw in a Star Trek situation with Q. Q was a person of the Q continuum. He always taunted Jean-Luc Picard in the series. And one of the things he was able to do was in the last season, an episode called Tapestry, where he was able to take Picard back to his Academy days. But the thing was, he took his original older self back, but people perceived and seen him as the 20-year-old that he was back in the Academy days. And so he went back to try to correct things that he did that was wrong in his life. But the only problem with that is that it kind of was disastrous because, you know, he had the memories when he went back of all the years of things that
mm-hmm.
happened.
Yeah.
But it didn't affect the timeline of the other people with him.
Okay.
The only thing that it affected was just Picard. And
okay.
Q told him that it wouldn't affect the timeline. The only purpose is his well-being. And when he found out, when he made it through, and to see what he would originally turned out to be, he didn't like what he turned out to be and wanted to go back to the way he originally was. So if it wouldn't have, for me, if it wouldn't affect other people around me, you know, going back, you know, I would be fine with it. But if my problem is if I went back and say, for example, someone died that wasn't supposed to die, or something happened, an accident that wasn't meant to happen, it's the whole It's a Wonderful Life, Bailey situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Type thing, you know, I wish I wasn't born or whatever. Then you see your life the way it was, you know, if you weren't around and other people went on with their lives. So.
Well, see, now I figure if somebody came to me tomorrow and said to me, you could go back to being a child again. You could go back to your teen years, or even if I could go back to my 20s or 30s. And I said, oh, okay. I would assume that everybody that I know, have known, whatever, is still existing, and I guess I would become a missing person.
I would become a missing person. What would happen to me? I mean, I married you, so where do I go?
I don't know. I guess you're kind of stuck.
Okay. And it brings the purpose, Bobby, of these kids. What's going to happen with these kids in their life in the original episode? I mean, where do they go? What do they do?
Well, I'd like to go back to something that Lynn mentioned and expand on that a little bit, and that is that about if you could go back, where do you want to go? I think going back to your childhood is a waste of time. It might be, she said something about early 30s, but I think...
20s to 30s, yeah.
Well, I think it would be better to go back to when you just get out of high school, or when you just get out of college, or when you're in your early 20s, because those are pivotal times in your life.
And then you can make better choices, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you can go back and relive it, because everybody has regrets. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? People who get divorced 3 and 4 times wonder why they were married.
I shouldn't have taken this job. I shouldn't have taken that job.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an opportunity that might have changed your life. Things like that. And I think that does have some value. But I don't know. I mean, it's only valuable, in my opinion, if you make better decisions next time.
Right. Yeah.
Just go back just to be younger, or just because you don't like the way you look, you got too many wrinkles, or your hair fell out, or whatever, is really a very poor reason to go back. So you'd have to make better decisions. Before I forget, I want to bring up what Lynn mentioned about John Marley. We watched this episode together earlier today, and there's a scene in it which he says, I'm 42 years old. Or 43, I forget what it was.
Well, no, he said, I started this job when I was 32,
and I'm now
43.
And I went to IMDb later, and actually at the time of this filming, he was 54. And he looks 54. He's got gray hair, and it's kind of ridiculous to give him that age.
Yeah.
And by the way, John Marley is best remembered, of course, as being the victim in The Godfather who had that horse's head put in his bed. And I never knew this. Maybe a lot of people do know it, but I also went to IMDb about that. And that horse's head in that scene is not a prop. It's a real horse's head that they got from a slaughterhouse. They used a fake horse's head in the rehearsals, but when they went to do it, they used a real horse's head. Of course, there wasn't any blood anymore. They had to have fake blood, but that's a real horse's head. Next time you watch that, you want to look for that. So all I can say is no wonder that he's screaming like he is, because it's the real thing.
I think that's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Well, they got the real thing. I don't know how you go to a slaughterhouse and just say, I'd like one of your horse's heads, please, but they managed to do it.
But yeah, he says, I was 32 when I took this job, and now I'm 43. And he looked like he was 55. Yeah, absolutely. So what do you give this episode, Bob?
Well, wait a minute. I'm not finished yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say, I vaguely remember it being remade as a movie, but I thought the Twilight Zone movie was very poor to begin with, so I don't think that I didn't like any of the stories in there. But anyway, I gave it a 2. I call it average, and I don't think it's much more than average. I'll tell you, I think I would have enjoyed it more if it had a more of a Twilight Zone feel to it, and that is that these old people get to go back to being children again. But when they get there, they find out that all of the physical infirmities they had as old people are still with them, only now as children. That's kind of a twist ending in the Twilight Zone, in which you might be careful what you ask for. You might regret it in the long run. So I think that would have been more interesting, but they didn't chose not to go there. They just wanted to make a sweet kind of little story, and it's okay, but it's not much more than that for me. And when I say something's boring, I give it a 2, not a 4. So I'll stick with the 2. All right.
Okay.
Bobby?
Yeah.
How did you feel, since we're talking about the movie itself as well, how did you feel and rate about the Twilight Zone, the movie section of Kick the Can?
Well, it's Scatman.
I didn't think it was much different. It didn't fascinate me any more than the other one. I I wasn't any happier with it there. But I, as far as the movie is concerned, I think the movie is dreadful. And they remade stories. I don't like remakes anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of them are any good. And that includes the Nightmare 20,000 Feet. I didn't like that either. So, you know, I thought all the stories were very poor. All right, Lynn.
Okay. And by the way, I want to welcome Guru 71 and guest number 4 and guest number 3. And Guru loves Kick the Can.
My goodness,
so
that
thank
ratings
you.
Are really up. Okay.
Well, that's all right. Thank you, Guru, for that. And Ed, I'm so glad you're back.
Yeah, I'm glad
we
I'm back, too.
We missed you. Oh, we missed you.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. I've had some pretty busy weekends the past few weeks.
Oh, I'm
so.
Sure.
Yeah, and I was away for
well,
a couple
I'm glad you were able to
south.
Break away and come on today. So thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem. You can hear me okay, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I was making sure. I haven't used any of this equipment in a while, so. All right. Anyway. All right, so, yeah, I like this episode a lot. It's actually one of my favorites. I don't know. I guess it speaks to the kid in us, that unspoken, obvious wish we had that we all could just stay young. I don't know if I want to stay a child, that's for sure, but maybe a permanent 20-something, that would be nice. Yeah, you know?
I agree.
What's that?
I said, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think going back as a child would have to include keeping your memory and living in your own, you know, proper childhood time frame, be it the 50s, the 60s, 70s, whatever it was, you know. Not going back as a kid, because, yeah, what would you do? You know, I enjoyed the story. Acting was actually very good. You know, and at times it was touching. I know some people didn't think it was, but I liked the emotion they put into this episode, and I thought it came through. My favorite scene is the ending where, you know, where Ben's pleading for his friend to take him along. And, you know, you feel his disbelief and his desperation, you know, he realizes his friend's going away and, you know, he's going to be left behind. I can't say a whole lot of negative about this episode, except for, you know, there was one weird thing. Did you notice what was Mr. Cox doing in his office that he didn't hear the firecrackers or the nurse yelling?
Yeah, I know. They had to wake him up. I know.
Yeah. You know, I thought that was kind of strange that Ben had
probably
to go and
have
tell
a hearing
him.
Aid.
Oh, but no, he's only in his 40s.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
oh, damn kid.
Isn't it weird that he lived there? He lived in the nursing home. How many people you know run a nursing home that actually live in the nursing home?
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
That is weird. He obviously wasn't married. I don't know. Maybe he's lying because he lies about his age, all the women he knows.
Maybe that's why he's got so much gray hair. Maybe he's just, he never gets time off. He's got to work there all the time.
Exactly.
You know? Oh, who knows? So, yeah, I mean, I think this is one episode that I think I wished it was an hour long myself. And I know you're thinking, oh, man, it would probably drag
on.
Oh, my
God, that would have killed me.
No.
Yeah, I know it probably would have killed you, right? You didn't like this one to begin with.
Well, I really need to regain my youth after that.
You'd be over there playing solitaire at the other side of the room. But anyway,
unless you're thinking an hour to maybe show what happened to the kids.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I'm
thinking,
something like that.
I think it would, you know, kind of be interesting to see an after story about where a group of formerly senior and now orphan children are going to spend their days in this, you know, renewed twilight zone.
Oh, they went
zone.
Up to Neverland with Peter Pan, you know, the there usual you. Thing, to fight Captain Hook and the alligator.
That's a reasonable explanation, sure. Why not? It's a twilight zone. Anything can happen. But, you know, it would be curious also to see the look on Mr. Cox's face when he realizes that his, you know, his career is over and the police are there trying to determine where that many seniors could have disappeared to. While in his care, you know.
Yeah, they're never going to be found. They're all gone. How can you get 10 old people and totally disappeared and never found? I mean, come on. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And those milk cartons are busy, too, with all their faces on the milk cartons. Where am I?
Exactly.
Do you know where I am? Missing.
Well, I mean... Oh, and also, as a side note, you know, Charlie's talking, you know, about his lost youth to Ben, and, you know, Ben's being all crotchety. All I could think of was a senior version of Bert and Ernie. That's all I could think of, you know. Good. Yeah, Charlie's all upbeat, and then you got Ben, who's all – actually, Ben kind of sounds like Bert, now that I'm thinking about it. He's got that kind
of –
Yeah,
actually, he's half of the two men from the Muppet Show, the two guys that would sit up in the booth and –
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah.
There you go.
Get off that stage there.
Oh, well. I give it 4 stars. I wouldn't give it 5, but I give it 4. I liked it a lot.
Cool.
So you mentioned Bert Mustin. I know. Well, I've always loved spotting him in shows and movies because Bert was actually a dead ringer for my Uncle Bill, who was – a little old Irishman from Belfast who used to come to visit
really?
our family. Yeah. He looked just like him. Every time I used to see him in a movie as a kid, I'm like, oh, it looks like Uncle Bill, you know. I never knew his name, you know, and now it's fun spotting him in movies. I'm like, oh, Uncle
Bill's in
everything.
He's in everything. He's in dramatics. He's in comedies. Dramas, comedies, he's in everything. And he just shows up. It's like you're watching a show and then, oh, there's Bert Mustin. Oh, there's Bert Mustin. He's been in Leaving the Beaver, All in the Family, Gunsmoke, Andy Griffith. I mean, he's in everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we need an old guy. Okay, get Bert Mustin. You know, it's the guy you get, you know. We need
he's
an
in
old
Andy
guy.
Griffith and Green Acres and just name all the shows he's in. Yeah.
There's nothing he's not in. You go look at his IMDb catalog of his career catalog. I mean, he's been in everything. It's unreal. Unreal. Oh, my God. So you give that a 4. And I give it a 4. And Robert, you gave it a 4?
4, yeah.
Bobby gave it a 2. And Dave's not here, so we'll have to wait to see what he gives it later on.
Dave would agree with me. He'd give it a 2.
Maybe. Guru, and guess 4, what do you give it? And guess 3, does anybody have any other ratings for it? Have you seen it and watched it and give it a rating?
The guess 4 gave it a 3.
Guess 4 gave it a 3. Okay, awesome. Okay, and Guru gave it a 3. Okay. And so, wait, guess 3 gave it a 3 or guess 4?
Guess 4.
Guess 4 gave it a 3. Guru gave it a 3. Guess 3 hasn't given us a rating. Well, that's okay. So, that's okay. So, we're kind of like, it's average to excellent is what we're saying here.
I want to say one more thing, Lynn.
Sure.
I meant to say it in my review. The whole thing was very disturbing to me, actually, because when I saw it back the first time it was on, I was a teenager, and I could have played one of the little kids in the story. Now that I've seen it 50 years later, I can play one of the old farts in the story. So I'm feeling pretty bad today, actually.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. He's getting
young kids, quit playing out there in the street where there's traffic.
Get out of here! Get off my lawn! My grandmother used to do that. My grandmother used to watch the kids playing ball out on the. We lived in a row home when I was a kid. I lived with my grandmother, my mother, my brother. We all lived in a row home, and the kids used to play baseball out on the street. And every now and then, the baseball would hit the window. It never broke the window, but he used to hit the window, and she was so scared that it was going to break the window. She'd run out the door and say, get out of here. Don't you play. I'm going to call the cops. And she did. She called the cops a couple times. Oh, my God. My grandmother's horrible. I didn't want the kids playing in the street. I don't know. But anyway, that's the way the old people are. And so now, on the 29th of September, we're going to be reviewing Piano in the House, correct, Robert?
Piano in the House, yeah. With my favorite actor in that one, Barry. Remember him on...
Barry Morse from The Fugitive, yep.
Space 1999. He played, I think, the assistant friend of John Koenig. I think he was in the science. He was a scientist or something.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, in the series.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, he was the Lieutenant Gerard in The Fugitive.
Yeah, in The Fugitive, yeah.
For 4 seasons, yeah. So that is going to be September 29th. who's this Garus that I was just yelling at kids outside? I'm so crotchety. Oh, Guru, you're okay. Kids,
you know what makes it nice, too, about this being going into the fall here? Because, you know, fall is only about a week away. But you know what makes it nice about this season?
This is where the grueling season begins.
It's about the heat on that. It's about everybody.
Yes, folks, football.
Oh, yeah. Bobby's happy about that. Football season. Football season, right, Bob?
Last a reason to live.
Moving to Pennsylvania and football season. All right. Okay. And we don't have to watch football games 3 hours earlier than they're supposed to be. So that's very nice. Yeah, because he's always complaining about that.
Ready at 10 o'clock in the morning to watch football.
Yeah, I know. And so tonight we'll be able to watch it in normal time. So, yes, we will on the 29th of September be doing Piano in the House. I'm looking forward to that. And I do hope all of you will be here again. Because, see, we had a lot of fun today. So come back so we can have some more fun. Because I would love to see everybody here. And we'll have fun. We'll laugh again. And we'll tell jokes. And we'll do all kinds of funny stuff. And, you know. That'd be cool.
I'm so glad we had this time together. Just to have a laugh and sing a song.
All right. Okay. Now that we've scared everyone away. Okay. Now, Ed, I want you here next weekend. No, not next
try.
Weekend. I'm sorry. Two weekends.
Yeah.
Two weekends.
Next time. Yep. I got it on my calendar.
All right, make sure you're here because we love your voice, DJ voice of yours.
I like my voice, too. It helps me talk to people.
Yeah, well, it helps you in your job. You're a DJ.
Wait a minute,
what's
so bad about my voice? Wait a minute, I don't understand that.
Yeah, but Ed's a DJ. Ed's a DJ. So he's got...
He is a DJ, he is what he is.
That's right. And Bobby, you could have been a DJ. But you wanted to be one once, and you could be it because you have a DJ voice. That's right, but you decided not to do it. Ed did it, and now we have to have Ed here. So, 2 weeks from now, you blew it. Okay, 2 weeks from now, we're going to have Ed and everybody else here, Guru, guest 3, guest 4, come back. Y'all come back now, you hear? Let's do the story about me. Okay. Well, anyway, we won't get into that. All right. All right. See you all in 2 weeks. Okay. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Twilight Zone, the movie.
Most everyone over the age of 20 remembers with relish the marvelous TV adventures into time and space called The Twilight Zone. Very clever and very scary stuff they were. And so a bunch of young film directors in Hollywood have gotten together to film the ultimate tribute, 4 25-minute episodes, sort of. The directors are Joe Dante, John Landis, Steven Spielberg, and George Miller. And the biggest surprise is that the worst episode was directed by Steven Spielberg of E.T. fame. Here's a scene from that episode with Scatman Crothers playing sort of a magical cheerleader to some old people who want to become young at heart.
Maybe if we played Kick the Can, you'd get a little hold of that magic we all been missing. A little hold on you.
Look, their bones are old and will break if they try to run. Their hearts are old. Their lungs are old.
Oh, Miss Cox would never allow us to go out there and play, Mr. Bloom. It's against the rules.
Rules? Did rules ever stop a child?
No.
You gonna let rules stop you from the chance of being young again?
No.
You see, this old man still has a little magic left in him. And if you believe, I can promise to make you all feel like children.
Yes, but
you're making promises they can't keep.
Mrs. Dempsey, I want to see you dance.
Oh, I'd love it.
And I want to see you climb, Mr. Weinstein.
Like a capsule, I'll climb.
We'll break the rules.
What can they take away from us? We are already lost.
What are you thinking of playing, Mr. Bloom?
Tonight.
Well, he has a nice smile, but the scene is just too obvious for my taste. Now, the scariest episode is The Last of the Four, directed by George Miller of Mad Max fame. It tells a story of an airplane passenger deathly afraid of flying. How would you like that to be your in-flight movie, The Twilight Zone? Take another flight. That was John Lithgow, and he's terrific in this little story. The reason this section works the best of the four is that it, more than the others, I think, convinces us that we've really entered another world, which was the whole secret of the show. I also somewhat like the story about a woman traveler visiting a weird family full of human cartoon people, and the moral parable about racism that opens the film. It's okay. So, on balance, an okay movie, just barely okay.
I would say it's just barely not okay. I didn't like either one of the first two segments. Mm-hmm. John Landis's thing about racism, I thought, was very predictable.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Spielberg was the disappointing low point.
Amazing.
The two lesser-known directors, Joe Dante, who has that part where the traveler goes into the strange people in the roadside house.
Kind of neat.
And then George Miller of The Road Warrior with the scene that we just saw. Those were good, but on the whole, I would say I couldn't recommend the movie.
Well, we both agree it's sort of 50-50 on the four segments. The thing that tips it over into positive for me is the opening thing with Dan Aykroyd, the introduction to the four segments. Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks, they're very funny, and they come back at the end just barely enough to make
a
recommendation.
Wouldn't you say with all the tradition of The Twilight Zone, they could have come up with four episodes, four strong ones instead of two?
I wish they had.